And now, let's turn to Inside the City, a weekly chat with local officials, residents, and personalities providing up-to-date and relevant information about what's happening in your city of Palmer. Moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio once again, Nate Wallace, the city manager of the city of Palmer. Welcome, Nate.
Good morning.
So, you did some magic. You know, I understand that you're in control of the wind.
Yes.
And you were able to turn it down. Not completely off, but turn it down.
Well, we've been looking for a break in the wind for the last 5 days, and it's nice to have it let off, but it's none too soon. Affects a lot of things in the city.
Well, I can tell you my own personal feeling was I noticed, and it felt very good. I felt good walking across town and not having the wind go, even though the single digit temperature out there, and they said this is cold, but it didn't feel that way. It felt different. So whoever did it, whether it was someone in your office or elsewhere, I appreciate that. So we're here into February, and the city of Palmer, of course, is way ahead of everybody else because the budget's done. And I know that the sister city of Wasilla is beginning that process across the way. And of course, both the borough and the school district and legislature are all there. So have they come to you and asked for advice?
No, usually we don't get asked. We get told what we're going to be paying more for, but we haven't had those conversations yet. I don't know that we will this year, but it's nice to be able to sit back while everyone else is struggling because of the financial economic times. But we did go through the throes of our own. It's just right. A little offset. The trick for us is forecasting what will happen at the state, what will happen to the borough, because rates potentially can change or revenues could change. So for us, we have to forecast based on what we think is going to happen. And then mid-year for us was when their budget's passed and we may have to make adjustments. But so far we've been pretty good at our estimates over the past few years.
Okay. Well, I know that that the city has digested, if you will, some large construction. The new Fred Meyers is now well into operation and going along. I'm going to start with the question I sometimes ask at the end: what about the old Fred Meyers building? Anything?
Nothing that I know of that's concrete. I have heard. I've been approached by a couple of different folks on zoning for that facility, and so far everything that's been asked is fits within that facility. But it's really between Fred Meyers and whoever they're working with on closing the deal, coming to terms with how much, either for a lease or for sale. But there has been interest lately, so that's good news.
Okay, and perhaps sparked by the fact that it's February, and if somebody were going to take advantage of, if they were going to do any work, whether it's outside or wherever, during the better weather time of spring, summer.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we're coming into the construction season here in another couple of months.
Okay. Well, looking back, last year's construction season, how did it fit with the kind of the previous years? Are we up, down?
Down. Overall, the value of construction is down. Even looking back the last 10 years, the value of construction was number 9 out of 10. Activity, though, was the number of building permits was really only down by about 10.
Oh.
Our average is about 90 permits per year, and we were pretty close to that. Again, when you look at the actual number year to year, it varies by anywhere from 1 to 12. Again, number 9 out of 10 last year, but when you look at the level of activity, it really hasn't changed significantly. It's
okay.
Just the type and size of projects.
Okay. Well, there's another interesting topic. I was curious where the city stood, the council and others, and that has to do with the upcoming election in Anchorage, the vote-by-mail process, which I know has been thought about, certainly at the borough and city levels. Is this a wait and see situation, or how much interest is there in the potential of moving to that kind of voting?
There's always interest in how we can reach out and gain more folks to participate in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's transparency and tampering and all the things that are brought up when you change a system. The city is watching it, much like the rest of the borough.
Okay.
There's a cost to switch over, and those things are really unknown. So the discussions have been had, and it's really in the clerk's realm, but it hasn't come to the point where we've had to do anything or we've been told to do anything. We rely a lot on the state for support. So if the state goes to a complete vote-by-mail system.
Ah, okay, makes it easy.
It may force us to that, or we'll have to invest in our own voting equipment.
Okay, that's the state level. What about the borough? If the borough looked on and said, hey, you know, this would be an advantage, maybe some upfront cost, but over time it would be a plus in terms of probably improving response and ballot issues and maybe be more efficient over time. Would that affect the city or?
It could potentially. Again, most of our equipment is state. The state really has taken, because of the past, state issues, state voting, they've really provided a bulk of the equipment. So as that ages, and again, depends on what the state does, the borough will also affect on how, I mean, we're part of the borough, so part of the voting system. If they go to mail only, and you live in Palmer, then we have the conundrum of you have to mail in your borough part and come in and punch your ticket for the city. So it's a group effort. It's not something that Palmer will be able to stand alone easily if that's the choice we make, and I don't know that we would do that. But
is there a working group or something that's looking at this issue? Or
the state elections office and the clerks, they meet regularly discuss. I mean, they're already working the ballots, how the process will work for this October. So it's an ongoing process and it's ongoing discussion.
So we know that also ongoing are legislative activities down at Juneau. They started here recently. What in particular is the city looking at, watching carefully? I mean, I know that the school district, for example, there have been some bills pre-filed, one to complete the budget item for schools early, like
yes.
April. Get that off the table and go deal with other things. Because traditionally, it's all put together with the end game, and that's what caused people to throw out pink slips and because you don't know how many teachers you have, et cetera. So I know that's being watched by the school district. What about the city of Palmer? Any particular things?
Well, there's a couple that are floating out there that may or may not have a direct impact on the city. There's one that's for natural resources and fishing that you wouldn't think would necessarily impact Palmer, but there's a provision in there for permitting. It would affect how we operate our wastewater treatment plant. So additional permitting for that besides DEC that would involve DNR that we're already working with EPA. We're watching that one.
Okay.
There's one that affects the Alcohol Control Board that doesn't necessarily affect the city, but it could potentially affect future alcohol licensing. We would prefer to see that put in the local hands. I don't think that will ever happen. But the more they restrict local control, local input, and put restrictions on businesses that have been operating for years, that's another concern. It doesn't necessarily last I looked at the bill and some of the works that go on with the committee that's crafting that, it doesn't affect our current users, our current licensees, but it could have, you never know how they may turn that. It's a,
okay.
Some of the restaurant licenses have been talked about. Our brewery licenses are being discussed on how they operate. The one with the distillery just recently wasn't legislative action. It was an administrative action or determination on what distilleries could serve and how they could serve.
Oh.
So those things impact our businesses, so we keep an eye on it. And then, of course, the sales tax issues, if those come up, and then the bag tax that's out there. So there aren't, I don't want to say they aren't significant, but they would impact the city in many different ways that we keep an eye on. But there haven't been any that, at this point, would tie our hands in any complete direction. So, and of course, there's income tax to talk about. It's not necessarily a city issue, but it's a citizen's issue. And if there's a there's a need for the council to take a stand, then that will be done through resolution. And right now we haven't taken any of those up.
You mentioned the wastewater treatment plant. Remind listeners at what stage of completion that is.
It's as of December, we were right about 50%, a little bit over. And with the weather, lack of snow and not very much rain, they were able to work quite a bit longer than we anticipated, than they anticipated. So we're well on our way to being substantially complete by June and actually flowing water through that thing, which is our target date with the EPA.
Oh.
So there's a building up now. The control building has been framed and shelled. They're working on the interior portion, which has been good for with the weather the way it's been.
Oh, sure.
You can actually work indoors. Right. And the concrete basin has been filled and tested. And it's been actually backfilled, so there's no longer a huge pit out there. So we don't encourage folks to go out there. It's not a tour site, but if you are interested, it's a public facility, and you can take a drive out to the Outer Springer area and take a peek if you're interested.
Another building that I noted that progressed along as we went into cold weather, of course, the new Jenske Automobile Building.
Oh, it's coming along great.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Watch people. I've worked a little bit outside in the cold. I watched them and said, oh, better you than me.
Yes.
But they bubbled it a little bit and got things done and got basically the building buttoned up so they made progress on the inside.
Yeah. A lot of it is the foundation, getting the foundation in before the weather
right.
Sets in. If you can get that in, then it's just a matter of having snow and rain.
Sure.
We haven't had a lot of that, so it's been good for folks that want to try and build it during the winter.
Yeah. Oh, do you have any sense of when it's going to be finished? I know it's a private building, but...
I think their cart was to be open by late spring.
Okay.
It looks like they might get pretty close to that.
Well, let's switch over to the fancy equipment that the city has. I'm talking about the weather station.
Road graders and...
No. Let's start. Well, we'll get to that. But the weather station... that sits over by the ball fields and
that's tennis. Not cities.
Yeah, but you it's within the city.
Yes, it is.
It's within the city, and that's an important point. I'm happy you pointed that out. That isn't the city's weather station. That's provided by someone else.
Yes, it's a I believe it's state equipment. It belongs to the Department of Environmental Conservation, DEC.
The DEC,
Alaska Department of.
And this has come up because there was a fairly heated discussion about another similar station that, in fact, I understand in the entire Pearl.
There are two.
We have one and the other's over in the Butte area.
Yep.
And the Butte area has reported some bad news, approaching bad, really bad, particulate concentrations, et cetera. But... this is, as you rightly pointed out, owned and operated by someone else, but it does provide a picture of the weather and some other features of air here in Palmer. Do you ever have any discussions with the people who do that? Or is it just...
That one in particular, no. We watch it from afar. The data, we don't have access to the data, but the borough reads it, and it's primarily for air quality, but it does take readings for all the other pieces that go into air quality.
Okay.
And I don't know the full history behind that, but I can hazard a scientific guess on why it's in Palmer. Based on the terrain, and it's at some point in time, EPA, DEC looked at the state and the pockets of population and air quality based on standards that were set in the lower 48 that apply across the country. And based on, again, on the terrain, Fairbanks was one that was identified as having air quality issues. And then the Butte, and how far does that bubble expand?
Well, where does the Butte begin?
Yeah. So the mountains, the river, the way the glacier blows down the valley, the way the valley set up, I think the one in Palmer was just to see how far and wide the weather and the impacts of the mountains are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Butte in that area is a bowl. It's captured. The wind doesn't, because of the way it's configured, the air doesn't move like it does move elsewhere. So Palmer across the river, you would think that we might have the same issues, but because of again, the terrain and the way the wind blows and all, we don't suffer the issues that they suffer across the river.
Okay.
So it's a sensitive issue, and it could affect the entire borough. If we've, the city, I can tell you our experience in dealing with DEC and EPA, and it's not pleasant. You can work with them, or you can stonewall, or you can work against them. And it, when it comes down to it, if you have the resources to go to court and maybe win, it's a very expensive proposition. And we found out that when other agencies like the Department of Justice become involved, it's very easy to become consumed in fighting with lawyers. And it's a lot cheaper, even though $12 million doesn't sound cheap. Our fine was, our penalty was $200,000 in lieu of potentially multi-million dollars in fines, on top of fines and also fixing. So through negotiations and working with instead of against, we were able to come up with a solution that was feasible for the city to accomplish.
It's interesting, you know, in talking about this, because many people have been looking at the issue of how to treat wastewater and waste in the borough. And there's been discussion, it's been an incredible discussion. To my knowledge, there are only a few. I just had this report. Let's see. There's Talkeetna.
Yes.
There's Settlers Bay. Mm-hmm. There's a smaller system in Wasilla, and then there's Palmer. We're the big ones.
Yes.
We're the largest of what we might be called a centralized treatment center. And we do this with Palmer. But the vast part of the borough relies upon other systems, and the criticisms of many of those areas have been that with continued development, you're going to get into trouble. You're not going to be able to spread all of this underground properly.
And yes, and the borough has protected itself and the citizens by not allowing, and DEC, the state, I don't know if it's the borough, maybe it's the state, but you can only have a septic system on a certain size lot.
Sure.
And that works well for large lots, but if the density of an area wants to increase, then your lot sizes become smaller or your septic systems become larger. Over time, you can move those around. As they become saturated, you can move it around your lot. And they generally last anywhere from 30 to 40 years. So once you move it twice, you may not have another place to move it.
Sure.
And that's where, in the future, we're going to have potential issues. And I don't know all the science behind it. You may be able to move back and forth, but septic systems aren't necessarily bad in themselves, but you have to manage the sludge that's coming out of those, and we don't have a facility in the borough to receive that sludge. It goes to Anchorage, so it's hauled a long way. It's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Anchorage is having its own issues with discharge and receiving that material. So septic systems aren't bad, but the more population you have those systems, you have to be able to.
Are there septic systems in the city of Palmer?
Not that I'm aware of. Most of those have been taken. There may be some larger lots as we expanded in the last 10 years.
Right. So circling back for a moment to the system that's 50% completed and going to be done here and operational, aside from the need to respond to a request from the EPA, et cetera, to do this and so on, looking at the technical improvement in what was to what will be, is this a very good thing for the city of Palmer?
I think in the long run, yes. So our system wasn't very complicated. The current system we have isn't very complicated. The sewage comes into a building where it's screened. The hard materials that won't dissolve are screened out and dumped. The sludge and water is then moved into a lagoon, flows into a lagoon. It's all gravity fed, where more of the solids settle and nitrification bacteria or bacteria causes nitrification to occur.
Right.
Breaks down a lot of the material and converts a lot of liquid into something that's more natural. Then it flows into the second pond where it becomes more clear, more solids are settled, and more nitrification occurs. Then a third pond where it's what we call our cleaning pond, which same thing occurs. And then it goes through our ultraviolet light building where it's disinfected. And then it's discharged. So there's not too many moving pieces. It's a couple of pumps. The most complicated piece is probably the ultraviolet system that has to be cleaned on a regular basis so the lights are effective. And then it's, again, gravity fed out to the river. The newer system is technical. It's still not quite, we're not treating with chemicals. It's still a similar nitrification process, but okay. It goes again to the grinding building into a big concrete basin that has, for lack of a better term, plastic ping pong balls. The plastic allows the bacteria to grow onto a solid surface, which then allows more concentrated bacteria to break down the material. Our issue has been ammonia. We haven't been able to break down the ammonia, or the resulting process increases ammonia, mm-hmm. typically in the winter. So having a concentrated basin, basically it would mix the same ability of our three lagoons into one basin. So then it goes from there to a lagoon where more solids settle, the third lagoon where more solids settle, and then into the UV building and out to the river. So it adds a process that has more pumps, more air. So it's more complicated in the process that it'll have more human monitoring than our pond currently does. But it's still not so complicated where we have to add chemicals and do things like that. We just have to make sure that the plastic balls.
So the cost of operation will go up on an annual basis a little bit? Or?
A little bit, yes. We already now pump air into our ponds, so now we'll pump it into there. So the cost of blowers shouldn't go up. The cost of electricity shouldn't go up as much. There will be some increase there.
Okay.
The long-term maintenance with making sure that we have the plastic balls or material that goes in there, that will be a cost every year. But again, more than we are now, but not as high as it potentially could have been if we'd gone with a different treatment system.
So the city then will have a system, sounds like good system for the city.
It's designed for this. It's designed for the future. If the EPA does change any requirements, we fully expect to be able to meet lower standards or higher standards, I guess. Lower numbers, higher standards. And also it has a capacity to expand where without buying more land. Okay. If we had to expand our plant now with a new pond, we'd have to buy several acres to do that. Right now we don't have to do but more than 100 feet.
And of course, the sewer system reaches out from the city to some areas beyond the city, yes. which also allows the city to help other parts of the area.
Correct. Our water district, much like Wasilla, both of our water districts, water sewer districts, are well outside our city boundaries. So our boundary pretty much goes down to the interchange, up to the hospital, along Trunk Road, Trunk over to Fishhook, and then back into the city.
Okay.
Glen Highway. So our area is large. And again, with this new system, we've forecasted to double our capacity from 1 million to almost 2 million gallons. The potential to take that much in with some additional construction. But yes, we looked to the future when we did this. It wasn't just to satisfy our current needs, but our current needs and potential changes in requirements and then also changes in growth.
And the operation of that system is paid for by the users.
That's correct.
It's not out of the general fund.
No, it's not. Okay. The general fund did provide a loan to the what's called the enterprise fund, the wastewater fund, to get through construction, but that will be paid back to the general fund.
Okay. Mike Malefsky and I've been talking with Nate Wallace. We've started with the wind, we've gone to waste, and we've covered some things in between. Any last pieces before we finish up today?
Well, we talked about the wind earlier and some of the things how it affects the city. The first, I think, most visible point is it blew away the snow, but it also polished the ice.
Ah, yes.
So it's a trick to put sand down on our intersections when it's blown away, but we continue to do that, and we continue to keep the snow drifts down. So if folks see a snow drift we haven't seen when we're out and about with the plow, not the road graders, but the front plow trucks, to get those knocked down, just go ahead and give Public Works a call at 745-3400. And the other piece is the garbage, solid waste collection. It's a couple of things are involved there. I don't know how much time we have. We can talk about this for
a few minutes,
for hours. But the first piece is it's changed somewhat in the past. Is the landfill has had to close
right this week?
Yes, and they've closed in the past when winds get pretty high. But they've got a, I don't know if it's a new permit or they're being forced to enforce it more. But we've noticed that they've closed more often than they have in the past.
Okay. Now,
25 miles per hour is the standard. They have to, by their permit, and 45 mile an hour gusts, they have to close, both for safety of the workers out there and also for the stuff just blowing around.
Right.
So that affects where we take our trash. We've always taken it there. We've never taken it anywhere else. So when they're closed, we can't pick up.
I noticed.
Yes. And we've had some communication, how to communicate that. We use Facebook, the robocall. Tuesday, we thought the wind was going to die down, so we rolled the dice. Said, we'll continue on. We'll try and pick up. Tuesday morning, 7:30, the dump didn't open. Calls didn't go out until too late. But that it did raise the questions amongst the staff. Okay, this looks like it's going to continue. How are we going to keep the city healthy? Because our first thing is health and safety of our city. The second piece is the beauty of our city. We don't want trash blown around.
Right.
And we really don't want folks to have to store garbage in their garages or wherever they keep it. It becomes a health issue. So we started like, okay, if this doesn't clear up by Wednesday, what can we do? And so we've coordinated with the Muni in Anchorage to be able to haul our waste to Eagle River.
Whoa. Okay.
Found out it's cheaper to dump, but it's also an hour drive.
So,
and you have to wait in line. So the fuel costs and the time costs make it still more expensive to haul it to Anchorage.
Sure.
But it is a fallback for an emergency. And our commercial customers are picked up more than once a week. Some of them are high-end users, or Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and some of us have some trash that we really don't want laying around.
So that was your solution?
So our first priority is to get to the dumpsters that are full, that have really food waste or any other kind of waste that would attract something other than people being curious to see what's in a dumpster.
Right.
Now, Thursday came along. We saw that it was going to be windy. We tried to notify as many folks through our means Wednesday night so that trash cans wouldn't be blown around. Mm-hmm. We don't control the other waste haulers.
So
their policies are different.
Oh.
So when you see a red truck or a green truck driving through the city and you don't see the yellow one, we can control how and when we pick up and how that affects the city. So when it comes to residential use, we have the capability of picking up on a different day if we're not plowing snow.
Sure.
So we can pick the trash up. But the problem is, should we pick it up? Should we have people put their trash cans out in the street when it's 15, 20 miles an hour? We can't get to them as soon as you put it out. They're out there for an hour, two, three, 4 hours, and 15 miles an hour will blow a trash can down the road, and now we've got trash thrown.
So
our second consideration when the wind's blowing is can we do it? Yes.
So I live in a house with a Thursday pickup. Didn't get a message, so I put it out. Didn't blow away. Put it back.
Yep.
When do I get to have it picked up?
Right now, probably next Thursday.
Okay.
Again, it depends on the wind next week. We'll do commercial pickup Monday. We'll do residential Tuesday. We expect that some folks will have double the waste. So our hauling Tuesday we expect to be slower than normal. We've considered trying to do the whole city on Tuesday, but then again, we pick up on Thursday for the other half. So at this point, based on the wind and the future, we're going to try and be back on normal schedule next week. So if there's folks out there, if you didn't get a call from the city, we ask that you, if you want to be called, that's the other piece, is some folks don't want to be called for everything. But if you would like to be called for a garbage pickup, again, contact Public Works or the city clerk's office, and we can get you added to the.
We did. That was a great job. You cover. I mean, that explained. And if you have to walk through the shoes of how do you do this and make it all work, it's not a simple matter.
Now, we haven't come up with a complete solution yet, but the first piece is health, the health and safety of our citizens, and the other is the beauty of our city.
Sure.
If I ask you to put your garbage can out, I can pick up your garbage can if it blows away, but we don't have the resources to pick up all the trash that's blown out of those cans, and we really don't want that blown around. And we're going to try and work with the other haulers, but they've got their processes, and we'll try to keep our city clean and keep the trash down, so when city cleanup comes around, we aren't.
And for our part, what we're going to do at the station is, when we've got windy days out there, we will remind people, because the pickup process, I'm sure, is posted each day somewhere when that decision is made.
It is now. Facebook is the easiest, but as our official means is Blackboard Connect and our webpage. So you can always check the webpage. We'll have something on the front page from here on out, not buried in Public Works. Facebook is good. Then our official communication.
And we'll commit to, on windy days, checking ourselves and making sure that information is mentioned to people.
That would be fantastic.
All right. Okay, thank you, Nate Wallace, for coming in today, City Manager of the City of Palmer.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.